Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to the Reasonable Voice radio show. I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal economic opportunity and justice for all without truth decay. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing both creative artists and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Welcome to the Reasonable Voices Talk Radio Show. I'm Marcello Rolando, your host, and I have a special guest today, someone I've met recently and have had several conversations with, and I can't wait to talk to him on air. It's David Bailey. But let me tell you a few things first. For almost a quarter of a century, Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly Magazine, some of you may know it as VCCQM, has delivered on why Virginia is key to our nation's past, present, and future. If you love statewide history of the Commonwealth, if you love civil politics, you'll love the Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly Magazine and our guest today, David Bailey, Virginia Capital Connections host of This Week in Richmond, seen weekly on Virginia's PBS stations. But that's not all. In addition, David Bailey Associates is a full-service public relations, government affairs, and lobbying firm, yes, we do have good lobbyists too, lobbying firm located immediately adjacent to the state capitol in Richmond, and for more than 30 years has developed and maintained effective working relationships with legislators and the executive branch, elected and appointed officials on all sides of the political spectrum. So, welcome David Bailey to the Reasonable Voices a radio talk show. You certainly are a reasonable voice yourself. How are you this day?
Marcello, I'm doing just fine, thank you. And it's a delight, a privilege to be on your show. We had our first conversation at an event at Virginia Union University here in Richmond, and I'm so glad for that opportunity to meet you, and I'm willing to follow your lead, and let's talk about whatever you want to lead us into on this day.
Well, I have a long list.
as
I told you before the show, you certainly inspire the kinds of things that I'm so very interested in, and meeting you was an absolute pleasure, too. But since you brought that up first, let's talk about that event that was sponsored in part by WomenMatter.org, and NAACP and a number of organizations that actually featured, of course, the two gubernatorial candidates in the Commonwealth of Virginia in debate. So what was your takeaway from that?
Well, I think that even beginning with the reception that was hosted by those organizations and the Wilder Library just created a good feeling for that event, and I'm so glad that there was that opportunity for people who wanted to hear and meet candidates,
mm-hmm.
because there have been not that many of them that have been completely open to the public, particularly with more than one candidate present. So I think that it was a good, very good evening and a great opportunity for those who came out and observed and were the active participants by watching and listening and learning what was being said.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was talking about
Gillespie and Dr. Northrum. But you are right. There were a number of candidates present. I met a number of them, and they've been on the show, who are running. And there's a record number of women, but I want to jump into that a little later. Let's talk about VCCQM. It's a magazine like no other, you say. All things Virginia, all things newsworthy, all things political. Tell us a bit, how did that get started? And just tell us about it, your experience with the Capital Connections Quarterly.
Well, I'll tell you, my experience at the Capital has been most enjoyable and, for the most part, I think very positive. And from the very beginning right through today, I have believed that what needs to occur is for citizens around the Commonwealth to be informed as much as they are willing to be informed and be equipped in order to do their own advocacy. So just a few years before we started the Quarterly magazine, we started a directory that provided contact information. Then we realized that that really wasn't sufficient, that there were stories that needed to be told. So often what makes the news would be the food fights and not the digging into the issues and also information about some of the key people at the Capitol. Some years ago, a friend referred to the magazine as the People's Magazine at the state capitol. And at first, there was a national magazine with that name. At first, I wasn't sure if he was providing a compliment or a critique or just what. But then as we talked a bit more, I realized that that was probably a significant part of its mission to help people know about someone like a Brenda Edwards, who just recently retired after 41 years of working in legislative services at the Capitol, to know something about Dr. William Ferguson Reed, Fergie, his nickname was, who was elected as the first African-American elected after Reconstruction, I should add. And he was elected to the House of Delegates in the 1960s. First ladies of the Commonwealth. We've always had the privilege and opportunity to have feature articles about them, and then some articles from them about key initiatives. So it's not a scholarly journal that devotes thousands upon thousands of words to a topic, but it's one in which political science professors around the Commonwealth and others are willing to contribute their articles. And so we've been delighted that it has lasted now, almost 25 years.
Wow.
And it is tough. Magazines come and go. And I think that by having the magazine online as well as in print, it's probably helped keep it alive for this long.
Because it chooses, even though you say all things political, its focus, obviously, is the Commonwealth of Virginia. That makes that even more rewarding, but it also makes it even more challenging because the Commonwealth of Virginia is different. The very fact that it is a Commonwealth is one of those reasons, but it's also, I think, fair to say, or you tell me, it's a state that is in evolution. Virginia is on the move, and we don't know where it's going to end up. You know, and I don't just mean red one election, blue another, and purple most of the time. And well, let's put it this way: Virginia borders on, is it both Kentucky and Tennessee? It borders with West Virginia, and then there's Northern Virginia, of course, which many are most familiar with. Then there's Charlottesville and what it's going through. That's quite a lot of history and current events. And I guess my question is, or my observation, and then you can respond any way you wish, is that for any magazine in print and or online lasting as long as the Quarterly has, the Capital Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly, it seems to me, as you say, that's a real accomplishment, but especially when you look at the details. Does that make sense?
Oh, it perfectly does. You were causing me to recall my early study of Virginia, in which we had the coastal section, the Tidewater, and we had the Piedmont, and
yes.
we had the mountains. And those geographic divisions of the Commonwealth were what we learned at an early age. And then along the way, they discovered there was a fourth one, the Cumberland Plateau. So we know the geographic formations of the Commonwealth. But the cultural differences, there's Virginia has, well, would it be fair almost to say a microcosm of what's in these United States.
Exactly.
Both politically, socially, culturally, religiously, what probably most any way you could look at it, if someone knows and understands and Virginia, you've got a good sense of what these United States are like.
You know, and I think that was what I was trying to get to, David. Thank you for putting it so succinctly. It is a composite of the United States of America. And it has topography. It has as you say, the cultural, historical, and political differences. And it can be an example to the nation in, I guess it's fair to say, in what not to do and what to do. I think we try, you and I, to be, well, I know you are much better at being nonpartisan than I am, but we do approach history and current events with objectivity. I think that's fair to say of us. A little pat on the back. But
Thank you.
Yes. And it's not always easy. But
no.
What about some of the people you've covered with the magazine? I mean, there must be great stories of newsmakers of the day. Because you mentioned this, some of the stories that we don't hear. We know about John Glenn, but it's only been lately through the book and the movie Hidden Figures that we realize, look at all that developed, not just in support of John Glenn's marvelous mission into outer space, but in a cultural support and growth and evolution.
Well, you know, I think one of the most delightful persons that I've had the opportunity to meet who's not serving in the General Assembly, I have plenty of delightful ones there,
mm-hmm.
but one who served back in the 1960s, a physician by the name of Dr. William Fergie Reed.
Uh-huh.
And we have, I think twice in our magazine, we have featured stories about him.
Mm-hmm.
Fergie no longer lives in the Commonwealth. He's lives in Maryland now.
Mm-hmm.
But he must be 91 now, and very, very active politically and concerned about his Commonwealth. And then another example, a legislator who's among the seven who chose not to run again for the House of Delegates,
mm-hmm.
a Northern Virginia Republican of the name of Dave Albo.
Oh, yes.
Quite an interesting, creative attorney. Legislator, and the quick example that I would give to you and your listeners is that Virginia legislators wrestled with trying to possibly make the marijuana oil legal, if it would help children and adults also with dealing with epilepsy.
Yes.
And the Senate would pass the bill, and it would get to the House of Delegates, and it would die.
Mm.
And in very recent years, in fact, it was in 2015, Dave Albo, and we featured this in our magazine,
mm-hmm.
and I salute him now, 2 years later. He and one of the attorneys working at the Capitol for Legislative Services figured out the solution.
Mm.
And here's what they did. It's against the law in the Commonwealth of Virginia to carry a concealed weapon.
Yes.
Unless you have the authority that's been given to you by the courts.
Mm-hmm.
You have a permit. So what they determined would be the way that it would solve the issue, and people wouldn't be accused back home of voting to legalize marijuana,
mm-hmm.
which many of them feared if they did this, they might lose their seats.
Yes.
What they did was they fashioned the bill on marijuana oil exactly the way the concealed weapon law is written.
Uh-huh.
And that is, they made it illegal to possess or to have this marijuana oil, except if you had a doctor's order to have it.
Mm-hmm.
And so that may sound a little bit convoluted as people are trying to figure it out, but it was a way that solved an issue.
Yes.
It solved an issue of enabling people to use something that's been found in other states and other countries to be very helpful in dealing with epilepsy, and it solved the way that it had to occur to get the bill passed.
Exactly.
And I think that there are creative people and creative solutions that occur that just don't get enough attention, and I think that in that particular issue of the magazine in the summer 2 years ago, we featured what Dave Albo and then the legislators all agreed.
Mm-hmm.
And so that whether they be conservative or moderate, they agreed to enact that law. So I'm just delighted for the opportunity to get those stories written and to have it published, have it available online as well as in print.
Well, you know, you make such a great point because as we all know, the headlines, TV media in particular, TV news, cables, whatever, they get so fixated on one big story, we forget the human story of the millions behind something. And something like this, that someone came up, and he looked at the problem and said, look, this is good, we understand your political concerns, how can we make this work? And so I'm glad you told that story. I mean, we need creative people. I used to say we should elect more teachers and artists and fewer of whatever. But I don't want to get us in trouble too much anyway.
Right.
Yes. All right.
Thank you.
Well, let's take a short break. This has been terrific. We are talking to David Bailey. He is, for Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly Magazine. He is the host of This Week in Richmond. And he is seen on Virginia's PBS stations and informs the general public, but also, I think, if I may put my spin on it, informs the voter, the electorate, so that whatever your choice in politics, at least you know the truth and know what's going on. We'll be right back with David Bailey. Please stay with us.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Blessed are the films that don't take themselves too seriously while packing detail and relevance into a fully entertaining experience. Viva la Libertad is a wonderful comedy born of the political disillusionment and despair familiar to many, here set in the world-weary political arena of modern Italy. It's the preposterously comic tale of opposition party leader Enrico Olivieri, who is bone-tired of playing the game. At a critical moment for his failing party, he can take no more and goes underground in France in the home of his now-married former lover. Meanwhile, until they can locate their wayward leader, the politicians decide to replace Enrico with his twin brother, Giovanni. It should work. Giovanni is a depressive with no ability to live in the mainstream world on his own. What could go wrong? As it turns out, things go right. Giovanni, uncontrollable and a bit mad with pharmaceutically induced optimism, gives interviews and playfully speaks blunt truth. He paints hopeful pictures of a thriving future. In the absence of normal political self-loathing rhetoric, everything becomes possible. The people rise up in support. But will Enrico come back? Viva la Libertad is a rich comedic discovery with a sensuous European feel, refreshing at its very core. Viva la Libertad. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental. Find us on the web at indiefilmminute.com.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voices talk radio show with the reasonable voice of David Bailey. We've been talking about the history of his Virginia Capital Connections quarterly magazine, VCCQM. David Bailey is the host of This Week in Richmond. He's seen weekly on Virginia's PBS stations. And David Bailey Associates is a full-service public relations, government affairs, and lobbying firm located very near where Steven Spielberg produced Lincoln, using the state capitol in Richmond, Virginia, as the Congress of 1862. So let's talk about the effect on women of our current president. I think there are two things, and David, I'm going to throw it out there and let you say whatever you wish, but two things that come to mind. One, not that Harvey Weinstein, if indeed guilty of all the things he's been accused of, is not someone we want our children to emulate, but I think the veracity at which information is coming out is in part due to one cat saying such things as easily at concerning a president, no matter what you may think of him, and enormous amount of women are running for public office at all levels. So, which would you like to take on first, and what are your feelings?
Well, think about the number of women who are running. We went back and looked at elections, the last three election cycles. I think if it went back more than that, the numbers would even be more dramatic. But typically in races for the 100 seats in the House of Delegates, there would be 20-some women running.
Yes.
And that 20-some could be from the low 20s to the upper 20s. It just and that's in this decade.
Mm-hmm.
This year's election, there are 53 women running.
Wow.
Which is a tremendous difference. And I think that we didn't do an official survey, but we sent something out to each of the ones running, the incumbents, as well as the ones challenging, and got some very interesting comments back. In fact, the magazine that I'm eager to get from the printer and get it out around the Commonwealth not only features on its cover the 26 women who serve in the Senate and the House in 2017, but then has a two-page spread of the photos, the pictures of 53 women running for office.
Wow.
for the House of Delegates, many of them running for the first time for any particular office. Some have served on school boards, or they've served in other capacities, even been elected in those positions, but most of them just running for the very first time. And I think the theme of resisting came out in many of their comments, that they just if they were stimulated to run for office due to what's happening nationally.
Yes.
Those presidential election, and just wanting to be there. One of the Republicans running acknowledged that many perhaps of the Democrats were running to resist. She was running to represent, and so they're not all Democrats,
exactly.
But largely so, but just a significant number. We're having the conversation before the election, so we don't know what the numbers will be at this time. But I'm sure right now in the House of Delegates there are 16 women in the House out of the 100, and I think that number will at least be, at the very minimum, will be 18, and it could be 20, it could be in the low 20s, the numbers would increase. Again, without getting district by district in mind, there are two open seats currently with a man representing that district in which both parties' candidates are women. So there will be a woman will be representing those districts.
Yes.
Regardless of the of which one it is. And I think that, again, if I compared the Senate of Virginia with the House of Delegates, 10 out of the 40 members of the Senate are women. That 25% is only half of what you might say would be the population of the Commonwealth, but it is 25%. Then you contrast it with the House of Delegates, where it's only 16%.
Yes.
16 out of 100. So the House, in that sense, would be seen as behind the Senate as far as having a more substantial number of women who would be serving.
I do feel that we need to look at whether Einstein said it or not, you know, to keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result is kind of crazy. So it may not solve all of our problems, but I'd be very happy if there was a great gender revolution in politics. And I mean that for both Republicans and Democrats. I do think men, particularly older men, have gotten us where we are. We talk so much about change. Well, let's let the women run things a bit. I've had some incredibly impressive women who I've worked with and who I've worked for and who've worked for me in my lifetime. And I find generally a real nurturing respect for the other people involved in the organization or on the team, and the ideas and the thinking. It's just, if for no other reason, the genders, like it or not, tend to see issues and challenges a little differently. And what would be wrong with that? How do you feel about the gender change? Is there a gender revolution? Are we seeing a little, I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking it anymore, from the female side of the aisle?
I think, you know, depending on how the election turns out in Virginia, that we will know, certainly, obviously, no more, but I think even in the willingness to run, that's so dramatic and so powerful. Now, the only thing I think that you said, Marcello, that I might take issue with, and it's not just that I've enjoyed living a few years and a few years longer than some enjoy, that some of the most progressive and open and resilient legislators over the years at the Capitol have been those that are in their 70s or 80s.
That's true.
And I think of right now Republicans and Democrats that would be in that age range. And I may get myself in trouble, but in many ways they are more open to wrestling with the issues in a nonpartisan, bipartisan way than some of the younger legislators are. And here in the greater Richmond area, you know, we lost to retirement Walter Stosch, a Republican, very much working across party lines. In Prince William, they lost Chuck Colgan, who's recently died. I mean, and without, I mentioned them without mentioning those that are still living at the, and still serving. I guess there was a time that I might have been more persuaded that some sort of term limit was a good thing. But then over the years, the 30 years in working with legislators, I've seen younger ones mature and grow into positions of leadership and not be so strictly partisan that you couldn't work with them if you were on the other side of the aisle. And then I've seen perhaps too many of the younger ones as a result of gerrymandering.
Yes.
As a result of gerrymandered districts being more extreme and then finding it more difficult to work across party lines because of their fear that if they did, that then they would be primaried and would lose their seats.
Yes.
So, but if I go back for just a moment to the, you mentioned Weinstein.
Yes.
If I pronounce his name correctly and others, you brought back to my mind something from 25 years ago when I was standing somewhere in between the General Assembly building and the Capitol talking with the legislator. And I suddenly discovered he was not really listening as much as I wanted to be listening. In fact, he was not even looking at me. And he turned his head, and then he came back, and he said, "Did you see that?" Did you see that?
Yes.
And I said, oh, you mean my daughter?
Ooh.
He turned two or three different colors before he came back to his original white color. And I told my daughter, who just finished undergraduate and was working for the Senate to that session, starting her graduate school work, that if that legislator looked at her or spoke to her, to let me know. And she said, oh, Dad. But I say that to indicate that I guess my primary point, Marcello, is that men need to stand up.
Yes.
And when I think of the number of men who knew what that movie mogul was doing and did nothing, some have come forward now and have tried to apologize because we should have spoken out.
Yes.
We should have said something that we men have allowed things to go on that we should not, whether it's in a political setting or whatever setting it's in, that we women will stand up, and fortunately they are now.
Yes.
Men need to stand just as quickly.
You know, I couldn't agree more. As our mutual friend Eileen Davis often says, that it's the men who stand up, because people expect women to want equal rights amendment to be passed,
right.
And they expect to be treated equally and equal pay. But when the men join them in that argument, which we should, if you want to call yourself a real man and put it in those terms, you should be, especially when it comes to equal pay, for instance. If you are married,
yes.
Well, if you're a married man, you benefit from your wife getting equal pay. You know, it's not, so if you can't do it for moral reasons, for Pete's sake, at least. What about, and I know Virginia cannot be completely divorced from this label that we get from the president and that fake news label, but your particular show is so focused on information, nonpartisan, equal information, bipartisan information, everyone to learn what to be given the facts that you need to make wise decisions, or whatever they happen to be, for your family and your community, your commonwealth. How, however, are you running into, either as a lobbyist or as a host, are you running into any kind of reaction? That is, are people expressing that they believe this fake news label? I'm not defending by any means the media at large. I don't think they're necessarily fake. I think they're ratings crazed. But okay, I said it. But what are you running into anything like that?
Well, I tell you, on the This Week in Richmond show, which was started nearly a decade ago by the Roanoke Public Broadcasting Station, WBRA, and here of late is now presented or sponsored by the Richmond WCBE. But what I run into most frequently, and I appreciate it when I hear it, is people saying, I'm glad you let him or her say what they were trying to say, and you didn't interrupt them, that you gave them a chance. I would say you do the same with your radio programs. You're not looking just to get a 15-second sound bite that would make me seem as foolish as I could be seen. And I think the important thing is for people to take the time and to listen to thoughtful shows. To watch if it's on television, and not get caught up in the news that really is just a short soundbite or a Twitter or a short posting on Facebook or wherever it is, but that they get more information. In our very recent issue of our magazine, we had a professor at one of the colleges write a very thoughtful 1,000-word article on fake news. And one of the things that's really, to me, scary about it is that an NPR study that was done by Stanford University a year ago, 2016, they found that, let me just read you this to you, that responses of more than 7,800 middle school, high school, and college students in 12 states indicated that more than 80% of the middle schoolers couldn't distinguish between an ad and a news story.
Oh, wow.
And that more than a third of the high school students considered a fake news story more trustworthy than a real news story, and that less than a third of college students could discern political agendas in sources such as MoveOn.org or on Fox News or whatever. So I think that it's a scary time.
Yes.
That we're living in, when it's not just us older folks or middle-aged folks, that when the younger generation from middle school on up through college and university are not really distinguishing the difference between something that's reliable, accurate news and something that's not. And there is a need. One of our writers, Jim Dillard, a former legislator, has written an article on civic education that's in the issue, the magazine that's at the printer right now. Talked about the illustrated over and over again in his article the need for more civic education.
Yes.
And that to try to help people know and understand our Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and then hopefully along the way to develop the skills to be able to determine and discern what's really some accurate news and what really is just opinion.
And see, and that's the, you really nailed it. It's true. I mean, was it, I don't know if it was Tip O'Neill, who it was, that you can have a right to your opinion, but not to your facts.
Right.
Yeah, that is the case. I think, I mean, social media, Twitter, Facebook, Google, whatever, I see them as they're a necessary tool for getting things said, but I often write, but please don't get your news from, I mean, you can get information, you get opinions, you can get a lot of things, but what you read is not usually factual news. It has, unless someone sends a link to an actual news publication, I do a lot of that, but but people basing their votes on what they see on Facebook, I find that terrifying.
Oh, you know, scary.
You know, really.
It is scary, yes.
Well,
it is.
We have had a marvelous time. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I certainly have
to have you back on, because I actually want to talk to you about how you've, the first ladies of the Commonwealth of Virginia who you've met and talked to. We must have another time for that. This is... because we need to go now, but this has been exceptional. We've been talking to David Bailey of the Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly Magazine and the host of This Week in Richmond, and also of David Bailey Associates. David, any parting words, any final words of wisdom? I've been so enjoyed your input and your insight.
Well, I thank you, Marcello, very much for the opportunity to be on your show and talk, and just hope that in all the shows that you do and the information that's out there, that people will pay attention to what's happening, and that we'll come through these challenging times, whether they be in the Commonwealth or locally or in the nation, if people just will be better informed, and then we'll stand up for the values that we all claim that we have.
Yes. Thank you so much, David Bailey. I so appreciate your time and all that you do and all that you contribute to the Commonwealth and through the Commonwealth to the nation, really. Virginia does certainly, you know, mother of presidents and all that, but I mean it's more than that in the way that you give us the information and the facts to know, to make up our own minds. So appreciate you being on the show, David Bailey. Thank you, and I wish you and Virginia Capital Connections Quarterly Magazine and This Week in Richmond all the very best.
Thank you. Thank you.
Bye now.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Some subjects are uncomfortable to contemplate. This doesn't make them less fascinating, perhaps even a bit more so. XXY is the coming-of-age story of Alex, a 15-year-old intersex child. She was born with XXY syndrome. That is, she has the chromosomes and the physical characteristics of both sexes. Lest this sound like a morality tale, that is certainly not the case with this touching and challenging first film by Argentinian writer and director Lucia Puenzo. Alex's father thought of his child at birth as perfect. He did not want the condition addressed through surgery, which could lead to serious repercussions. Respecting her uniqueness, he moved the family to remote Uruguay so that Alex could grow up in a less threatening environment. Alex has stopped taking the hormones which had been guiding toward the feminine and is beginning to struggle with sexual identity. Her mother invites a surgeon and his family to visit to subtly explore the surgical options. The surgeon's son, also an adolescent, falls for Alex, who has feelings, confused feelings, for him as well. XXY has been greatly admired for its non-judgmental respect towards its subject. It's an honest exploration of the difficulty of difference. XXY. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental. Find us on the web at indiefilmminute.com.
Hello. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us and becoming one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Women trump women haters. 1513. With or without metal codpiece, Ponce de Leon discovers future home of thongs. 2005, Pope John Paul II, on the wings of arguably the largest funeral ever, returns home. 2016. More than half of American population suffers the slings and arrows of outrageous income disparity, second-class citizenship, and constitutional inequity. In other words, no penis equals diminished returns on education investment, glass ceiling limitations on the rainmaker's reign, and, as for your body, public domain property. Add a dash of color and reap the rewards of gender gap, risk of rape, and small checks and balances on steroids. Finally, for lessons in Christian hypocrisy, political expediency, and red state denial of marital bliss, take your choice of LGBT. Using the Bible to disrespect any American damages personal pride, international reputation as justice for all beacon, and national honor. For better or worse, like virginity, honor is lost when suits ignore female protestations or challenges, choosing to stand by rather than stand up for better half. Honoring equal economic opportunity and income parity is not only an Olympian issue, it is the cornerstone of our global definition, national proclamations, and raison d'etre, unless we elect to declare our Bill of Rights a sovereign moral compass that excludes all but straight, pale-faced males. To embrace an America of financial elites astride to the backs of both working sexes is choosing mob rule over reason, chaos over our democratic republic, and the dishonor of mass treason against all Lincoln and hundreds of thousands fought and died to preserve. We are either the trumped America of a forgotten Tea Party, hooded KKK, and caste system of haters hating diversity of race, creed, and lifestyle, or we are a national work in progress striving to move forward after a calamitous trickle-down banker-induced recession, recapturing its center in the courage of United We Stand.
When peace like a river attends the American way, the American dream blooms with the promise of faith and the potential of science. However, when on prom night we elect to roll over and expose our Declaration of Independence to corporatism's Citizens United tool, we carry to term collateralized debt obligations, gender apartheid, and forgetting Earth and our habitable time upon it aren't inexhaustible, both natural resources and, we hold these truths to be self-evident, extinction. Historically, when failing to be first responders to love thy neighbor as thyself, we've become vulnerable to both the lowest domestic common denominator and most violent foreign threat. For example, for our antebellum South to thrive, it sustained itself on a foundation of inhumane servitude, enslaved men, women, and children. Native Americans had to be humiliated on a trail of tears to guarantee the survival of an Andrew Jackson presidency and ultimately the sanctity of the Mason-Dixon line. In the 21st century, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, ISDA agreements, corporatism's pharmaceutical, tobacco, food conglomerates, and oil company boards, and political puppets prostituting the South shall rise again, might require a 21st century Abraham pleading to a god to save us from demigods of, by, and for the street. However, hope is still America's bottom line. For even in the midst of Sodom and Gomorrah, the Great Depression, the Cold War, Cuban Missile Crisis, and even Bush-Cheney oil wars induced recession, we have reaped rewards from investing in women and men of honor, integrity, and character. While there is little honor in Chicago murder rates, border walls, mass incarcerations, or Loudoun County CIA use of school buses, our national character, like American female soccer players, is a rapid response team to any individual invitation for liberty and justice for all. Consider this. Emulating good Samaritans like Jacob Grant, Richmond's Chad Dermeyer, and the call to action by the United States women's national soccer team on and off the field is America's best family value. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with family and friends, especially online. We enjoy hearing from you, and in response, yes, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. So please do continue to email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com. However, if you prefer to simply make a donation, your donations are greatly appreciated and can be made through PayPal by clicking on the donate button found at the top of the homepage of the Reasonable Voice. Website.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I'm Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.